If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. This is Mind Medicine on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Great to have you. I'm Charles Kovess, your host. I'm Australasia's passion provocateur. For the last 31 years, after my lengthy legal career that I left in 1993, I've been provoking people like you to discover and pursue their passion. And this show is all about passion and mental health and mind medicine. And it's great to have you here. My guest this week is Vanessa, and we keep her surname undisclosed for her privacy reasons. It's not about her, but her story. So she is a mental health warrior, and it's a compelling story. I've heard her tell this story live. And it's a wonderful lesson for all of us, and it leads to very important solutions to mental health problems. And here I am in Melbourne, 7 p.m. Sunday night at 6 p.m. at the home of TNT on the Gold Coast, although next month we're going to be on the same time frame when daylight saving ends in Melbourne and Sydney, or a number of states in Australia. It's 1 a.m. in LA, it's 8 a.m. Sunday in the UK, and everybody, it's St. Patrick's Day. Now, I'm wearing red because I'm a passion provocateur, and Vanessa's wearing red because she's supporting me with passion, but let me assure you that this is a day of green for the Irish, and all my Irish buddies I've been sending good wishes to. I haven't yet had any Guinness, but I am going to have Guinness after this show. I was trying to remain relatively sober. So happy St. Patrick's Day. When I was a kid going to Catholic schools, we had in Melbourne a lot of influence of the Irish Catholicism and St. Patrick's, so that was a big deal. This show talks about how and why mind matters and how to keep yours in great shape. I discuss with my guests ideas to provoke new ways about thinking about your life and life generally. We discover insights into mental health issues and health issues of all descriptions. And to that end, this show is brought to you in association with Mind Medicine Australia, a wonderful charity that was established 5 years ago by Tanya DeYoung and Peter Hunt. And it was at their fifth anniversary of their founding that I met the wonderful Vanessa. So that's why I've invited her onto the program. And Mind Medicine Australia has succeeded the first time in the world to have two psychedelic drugs approved for use when prescribed by psychiatrists. That's psilocybin and MDMA. And we're going to be talking about the benefits of psychedelic drugs with Vanessa. This is a big deal. Please visit the website mindmedicineaustralia.org.au. It took 4.5 years of lobbying. So on the 1st of July 2023, finally, the Therapeutic Goods Administration in Australia gave permission for these drugs to be prescribed by psychiatrists when administered in a clinical setting. Now, we also talk about health, and my definition of health is based on the Hungarian word for health, and the Hungarian language is very precise. The word is egészség, and it means wholeness. And so whilst we're talking about this, the Mind Medicine program, health is, in my definition of it, and I invite you to consider your definition, but my definition is that health is the unique optimal balance for you of mental, physical, and spiritual elements. So we cover the mental, the physical, and the spiritual here. We talk about passion and its impact on your life and your health. And here's my proposition to you, that when you are pursuing your passion, your mental health problems will reduce. You see, passion comes from your soul. Mental health problems come from your mind. And there's a battle between our mind and our soul, our mind and our spirit. And when you are coming from pursuing your passion, you are coming from your heart space, your soul, your spirit. And mental health problems don't dominate your life. It's your pursuit of passion that does. So it's a wonderful way to live life. And so I hope I provoke you to pursue your passion, or if you don't know what your passion is, then to do the work to discover what it is. Now, before I start talking with Vanessa, I want to cover a couple of crucial elements that are happening on the planet. James Rogowski, a friend of mine, is doing great work on shining a light on the nefarious activities of the World Health Organization. And I have been involved in health for a very long time in my legal career, but also in terms of my own life. That's why I'm talking about health. And James Rogowski, the Director General of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, is not to be trusted. He's not a doctor. He has a nefarious, bad past. If you look into his past, you can see all about that at the website exitthewho.org. There's a whole bunch of resources on that website, and I urge you all to understand the threat to your life that is the WHO and its pandemic treaty. What the World Health Organization wants is the right in this director general to direct that there's a pandemic on. No evidence required. He just makes a decision, and then the Australian government, the government of the nation in which you are at, has to then shut down your nation. It is evil. It is, I say, corrupt. And what I say is, do not rely on experts on health matters. You see, you can make this decision to not understand the World Health Organization, okay, because you don't. It's very complicated. If you haven't got time to go there, but you don't have to slavishly listen to government and just say, oh, well, the government says the WHO is a good organization, I will therefore listen to it. Don't do that. Now, I want to announce the launch of a new book, not by me, but by another friend of mine, Jerome Corsi, who is an amazing man in the USA. He's written a book called The Final Analysis, and this is a book about the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. And The Final Analysis presents indisputable forensic evidence that two shots fired from the front and one shot fired from the rear killed the president. This book, released just this week, is an amazing scientific analysis of what's happened, and it shows, and here it shows, that the book definitively validates the correctness of the observations of the physicians at Parkland Hospital, who recognized immediately that the wound in JFK's throat and the blowout in the back of his head both involved frontal shots. You see, what this book proves is that expose a stunning government coup d'etat and a 60-year cover-up executed by the CIA, the FBI, the Pentagon, and the Secret Service to frame Lee Harvey Oswald as the Warren Commission's lone gun assassin. And you see, what happens is the Warren Commission says anybody who questions the Warren Commission is a conspiracy theorist. This book, The Final Analysis, puts a lid on that. It's a wonderful, huge amount of work written by David Mantic, who's an expert in radiology, and Jerome Corsi, highly regarded investigative author, journalist. The other issue I want to talk about that is a big issue is the stunning results in the Queensland government by-elections over the weekend. There's an 18% swing against the government. And I think you on TNT Radio talking about the bad behaviour of governments has led to this stunning result. And I urge all of us to talk about bad behavior of governments. You see, bad governments won't be tossed out if people take no interest. We need to take an interest. And I'm just appalled at the behavior of Australian state and federal governments. What I do point out in the context of COVID over the last 4 years is there's not one premier in power today who was part of the decisions taken to lock down Australia and take away your rights. It's appalling what happened. As a lawyer, a former practicing lawyer, but I practiced law for 20 years, your rights were stolen from you. And I roundly condemn the human rights organisations in Australia who said nothing. So I think that's about the main issues I want to cover. I want to bring to your attention the triple conference that happened in Albury this weekend. Have a look at a website, tripleconference.com. Topher Field, who does great work on the Aussie Wire. It was a three-day conference. You can buy a recording. The website is tripleconference.com. And at all times, remember, the science is never settled. When someone tells you the science is settled on psychedelic drugs, when it's settled on COVID, when it's settled on some other matter, it's BS. The science is never settled. Then do not comply. I'm a freedom warrior. This show is about truth. This show and TNT Radio is about speaking the truth. So speak the truth against government. Don't be cowed into silence. But while we're fighting for the truth, fighting for justice, fighting for a better way to live, fighting for the approval of psychedelic drugs, I urge you to be happy. You can choose to be happy while you're fighting this fight. If you want to contact me, my email is charles@coves.com. You can subscribe to my Charles Coves show. It's up to episode 191. You can find that on YouTube or Rumble. And you can go back and listen to all the shows that I've done for over 2 years on this wonderful TNT. All right, Vanessa the Bee, welcome to the show. Now, Vanessa is a mental health warrior. And Vanessa, we're not going to tell everyone your surname. And Vanessa has got a compelling story to tell. Please, Vanessa, welcome to the show. You are doing great work with Mind Medicine Australia. Please, and I met you at the 5th anniversary function. You brought tears to the eyes of everybody who heard you speak. So welcome to the Mind Medicine program and tell us what you're going to tell us.
Thank you, Charles, for giving me the opportunity to speak today. It's a pleasure to have met you a few weeks ago at the 5th anniversary. And I guess my story starts, well, it was 6 years ago when my husband of 30 years fell sick pretty much overnight, and he went into a severe state of depression. We hospitalized him 4 weeks later, and he wasn't responding to two of the antidepressants that were given to him. So the decision was made to start ECT, which is electric shock therapy. After the second course and a change in antidepressant, he went psychotic and was then sent under the Mental Health Act to the public hospital, where he needed to be locked away. And stayed there for 3 months. So all up his first session, he was in hospital for 4 months, pretty much 4 weeks after he fell ill. I must say, now that I've really got to understand a lot more about antidepressants and the side effects, certainly for a GP to hand an antidepressant to someone the first time they've ever met them, and to not advise anyone around that person that there could be some side effects. And I did notice some suicidal tendency after 2 days of him taking this medication, but I didn't know at the time that that could have been caused by the antidepressants. So it's only now that I can sort of piece certain things together that it does concern me now that antidepressants can be handed out so freely to people where GPs don't even know them. So my husband had the ECTs during that 4 months. He was administered 26 electric shock therapies. Finally, it sort of settled his mind a bit from being suicidal, and he was brought home. But he was never feeling great, and we continued changing his antidepressants. So for the next 3 years, he was in hospital all up 19 months. Four of the times he was locked away under the Mental Health Act, where I had to be sitting in front of tribunal hearings so that we could administer further ECT. And during that 3 years, he was given 96 ECTs, electric shock therapies, and was administered 18 different antidepressants. So it was I was desperate, and I certainly through those 3 years, I was very fortunate to be able to stay at home and look after him full time, which meant I could go to the hospital every day, feed him, especially after ECT. It can be quite traumatic on the person. And really it was the only time I could actually come in and bath him and shave him, because other than that, when you're extremely in a very severe state of depression, you don't want to do anything. But the electric shock therapy sort of numbs you for a little while until you sort of come out of it. I was there twice a day, every day for the whole time he was administered in various hospitals. I had him in both private and public hospitals. And I just continually asked to see any leading professor that could give light as to what was going on. And I went to the Black Dog Institute, and I spoke to one of the Australia's leading psychiatrist, and we did some work with him. And it's funny, when you every time you go into a new hospital and the head psychiatrist sees that he's had at the time say 48 ECTs, and they're sort of thinking that is really quite shocking. And the amount
By the way, I've never had an ECT. Is it a painful process? Like, it's a shock. Is it a shock? Is it a physical painful thing?
Look, each time you have electric shocks, the first time it happens, they have to put you under. So you have to have an anaesthetic.
A general
anaesthetic.
Yeah.
To go under. It only takes a minute or two. The procedure. And for my husband's, in my husband's case, after the first 12, they realize, because they normally only give it to you unilaterally at the front, but in his case, because he wasn't responding, they would give it to him bilaterally. So that meant on both sides of the head. And they would titrate it, so they would increase the voltage each time. And Franco certainly had a very high voltage rate given to him because he wouldn't respond. Look, some people I met during the times he was in hospital responded after 5 or 6. So it certainly does work.
But my question was it painful for him?
No, it's not painful. What happens, they give you a relaxant. They have to give your body a relaxant.
Okay.
And certainly the first time, each time, the block, like if he went in for 24, the first time he was in a lot of pain afterwards. His body was like as if he'd had a workout. Like, he felt very tired and his muscles were very sore.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, we've got to go to a break, but what we're talking about, everybody, with Vanessa and its relationship to Mind Medicine Australia is that Vanessa's experience with her husband, who eventually committed suicide, we'll get to that point, would have been so different had he been able to access psychedelic drugs. And it's really such an amazing story. And I know, like, you make a good point, Vanessa, that these antidepressants are handed out like lollies, like literally like lollies. So that's why this story is so important. I'm Charles Covesh. You're on the Mind Medicine Program on TNT, and we'll be back after these messages.
TNT's Hervé Morich.
Being reported today, Canada's financial intelligence unit has shut some of its systems down as it manages what it calls a cyber instance. So again, we've been warned many times over about cyber polygon and something like this happening at a greater scale before or during 2025. That's what has been simulated Whether it happens or not is an entirely different story, but more often than not, when they simulate, pandemics, war scenarios, they do come to pass.
Hrvoje Morich on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Are we on the air?
Am I on the air?
You're on the air.
On the air 24/7, your news talk giant, TNT.
Welcome back to the program. I'm with Vanessa. I'm Charles Coves. We're talking about the tragic story of Franco, her husband, and we're 48 episodes of ECT, electroshock therapy, ECT. So keep going, Vanessa, with your chasing or finding psychiatrists, anyone who could help your husband.
Yeah, certainly. Look, you know, each time you go to a new psychiatrist and tell them the history of what's already happened, they're quite astounded with the amount. Then they start their courses of different antidepressants. And in the end, what do? They go back and they start ECT as well. So this was happening constantly to me, where we would try a new hospital, a new private hospital that had well-regarded professors of psychiatry that would look at Frank's case. And, at the end, they were telling me that there wasn't much more that they could do for Franco after 96 electric shock therapies. One of the heads of one of the hospitals came to see me and said, look, there is this surgery that can be done on the brain where they put a rod inside. Not advisable, but if there's nothing else that can be done, he may need to go down that track. That's certainly not where I wanted to be. So, I was the type of person that always thought, okay, if this doesn't work, what's the next avenue to take? So I was constantly investigating what I could do. And when I came across the 60 Minutes, they had a program on psychedelics. And I really felt like this was somewhere that I could look in. I thought I better start looking into this more. So through a lot of investigating work that I did personally, I actually found the person that they had been interviewing, and I asked them, look, could you give me, I'm desperate now because I can't lock my husband away. He's suicidal. There's nowhere to send him. And I live in fear every day that he's going to take his life. So yes, they put me onto, they couldn't give me their therapist out of, because they didn't know me personally, but they said, look, there is this organization that has started called Mind Medicine Australia, and you could make contact with them and they might be able to assist you to access the scheme through, political means. And that's when I made touch with Mind Medicine Australia, and amazingly I had the wonderful Tanya ring me the following day and say, right, we need to do something for you. So we, through her connections, we wrote some letters, and we had one of the Green Party MPs write a letter on my behalf to see if we could possibly get access to the psychedelic psilocybin for Franco. And, I was running out of time. And it was all going to take time. And, when your husband's holding on for you to find a solution, because that's the wonderful thing with Franco, was that he believed I could find a way out of this for him, because it was purely something in his brain through stress from work had switched off, and he just suddenly, you know, they talk about stress with work and how it can give you a heart attack. Well, in this case with Franco, it did something with his brain and he just couldn't recover from it. So I'm very grateful that he held on for so long. And I always have to say to Zara, you know, you have to feel so proud of your father, because most people couldn't hold on to this enormous pain that they're going through for the length of time, the 36 months that he held on, which in the end, you know, when he heard himself, the doctor saying to me, there's nothing more we can do, you know, it's, yeah, and your husband's telling you, I don't want to see you go through this anymore. And then you just, you have therapists preparing you for the day that will eventuate. So for a year I was being prepared by our family therapist that was dealing, I was seeing a family therapist every week just to help me get through caring for my husband. I also had personal trainers coming to him three times a week. I had a personal psychologist for him. So I was throwing a lot of money, and I was, you know, when I think about it, most people couldn't afford to do what I was doing. And I don't know how they would have coped. And as a carer, if I wasn't there for him full time and I was trying to manage a job and a family, I would, it would come to a time where you would have to say, I can't do this anymore. So, you know, I loved my husband. I had been with him 27 years when this illness struck, and I wasn't going to give up on him. But there came a point in time for me that it was destroying me as a person, because to be around that all the time, it's extremely difficult. And I say that to people who are ill. It's very hard on the carer, because they're not in your, I understand from my husband's point of view that pain that he talks about, because he would talk about this pain that we can't fathom it unless we've been there. It's not a pain that we can describe. It's a total emptiness of no feeling, no happiness, no joy. You can't even look at your daughter with love. You know that you love them, but you can't feel anything. There's just nothing there. And it gave me an insight into what people out there are suffering. Hence, when Tanya got on board and was trying to help me, I just felt it reinvigorated and thought, right, this is, we're going to try this. But, you know, it came to a point. So when he took his life, and then Tanya, I, you know, kept on every occasionally sending me messages, you know, how's everything going? And I told her that I'd lost Franco. You know, she was just so beautiful and supportive of me. And in time, when they try to do their submissions and the second submission came along, they asked if I...
This is the submission. This is the important submission to the Therapeutic Goods Administration, TGA, to legalize the psychedelic drug. So there's a first submission that failed, and then there was a second submission. So that's the submission, the second submission to which you're referring.
That's right. And during that second submission, the TGA had actually said no. And then they asked for a revision, which is when Professor David Nutt from London came out to Australia. And Tanya approached me and asked me if I would share my story, because I had come from an accounting background, so I was very methodical. And I realized as a carer that psychiatrists don't share information. Nothing is computerized. They write everything on notepads, every single psychiatrist, and I saw many. And when they'd asked me, well, what has he been on? What happened? What side effects? How many milligrams? If I, after the second medication, had I not started to document everything that was going on, there was no way of knowing where he'd been. So I created this dossier. I pretty much every day had a calendar of what dosage he was on, what side effects he was having, and how long he was on it, when he had to come off it, how long, what hospital he was in, what ECT he had. Like, I kept it all, and then I summarized it. So when Professor David Nutt, who was coming out to Australia to present his findings on use of psychedelic drugs for PTSD and treatment-resistant depression, and he heard my story, and I was very fortunate to have been able to write a letter to our Prime Minister, and it was videoed, and they did a nice little 5-minute summary. He asked me to come with him to the TGA with Peter and Tanya, and the first thing he did was show them the 5-minute clip of me talking about the story and that we needed this change in Australia, because I can't quantify just how many people are out there that are suffering, that antidepressants aren't working, and that they shouldn't have to have 18 different antidepressants. If one or two aren't working, try an alternative, because if they're in such a bad way, what's the risks for them? ECT, they don't even know why it works, and it's been there for something like since the 1950s, they've been using ECT, but they don't know why it works. Talking about psychosis, well, antidepressants, there's side effects that can happen from antidepressants, and psychosis is one of them. And my husband got it through an antidepressant and then had to be locked up. And that's not a nice thing to do. It's a terrible, the first time it ever happens, it's soul destroying to have to put your husband in a locked facility for his own safety and for the safety of others. It's really, really shocking. But, over time, you become quite used to the system. So I feel like I've heard many stories over the 19 months of being in hospital. I met many wonderful people who had their stories that would share them with me. And so I learned a lot about what's going on in our mental health system.
And so at this second submission with David, now tell us what happened because I heard Tanya say that your story had a crucial impact on getting the psychedelics legalized. Tell us what that was, how did that happen?
When you're presented in front of 130 odd people at the TGA.
And indeed they're odd. We know that.
and you watch the clip of me talking about why we need to do this, my story, and it touches people, because I'm not coming there from a political angle or a medical angle. I'm just coming there as a person who's been affected by the loss of their loved one, and I'm left with a child without a father, and I'm concerned for her life moving forward, because the statistics on children with mental health after they've lost their own parent to suicide is...
I wasn't aware of those stats. Okay, so you, this 5-minute video, is it available for people to see?
Yeah, you can see it on the Mind Medicine website.
Oh, you've wonderful. Got it
there. There's a link there.
Very good. Yeah.
And it's very emotional. And every time I see it and I watch people around, there's not a dry eye in the room. It's quite touching. I feel very proud of how they got they got to help me get that message across. And I had people at the TGA later come up to me, many people, to thank me for what it is, for bringing the story and connecting it with David's research, because Professor David Nutt utilized Franco a lot throughout his presentation as to why we're doing what we're doing. And so I was very humbled by the whole experience, and I've had people since come to me and tell me that that made a huge impact on them to reverse their decision.
So that your video, your story tied in with David Nutt's research helped to reverse the decision, essentially. That's why your story was so important. And the point that I'm bringing, and that's what's so wonderful for our viewers and listeners to see, is that one story can make a massive difference. That's the essence of this message, isn't it?
Yeah. And look, it's when I got the news that that the TGA had approved it, you know, for me, I hold love for my husband dearly in my heart always. And I felt so proud of him, because it was through his strength to hold on that I could get an insight into what it's like to be so unwell, and to then be able to show this is the suffering that's going on, and this is what we need to do. We need this as an option. It needed to happen now and not in years to come.
So. Yes, that's a good point. Had he not been so strong, you wouldn't have had all of the evidence that, you know, had he committed suicide 6 months in, because I can't cope with this. But no, he held on for 6 years.
Three years he held on. Within 3 years to have.
Oh, sorry, I got the numbers correct. That was, he died 3 years ago, I think.
Yes,
and then it was 3 years, and that's why it's 6 years ago that this started. Yes, got you.
It started, but the 3 years, because I have that dossier, they showed that to the TGA, showing all the different medications and all the different side effects. There's a summary of that also in Mind Medicine Australia that shows all the different. Antidepressants that he took and the dosages and the side effects, because there is quite a lot of side effects in these antidepressants. Probably the worst was Parkinsonian that he had for a while, where he was just falling all the time and slurred. His voice was slurred. It was quite horrific, some of the side effects that he was having from these antidepressants. The only good thing was he wasn't thinking suicidal thoughts, because he was so unwell with what was going on with the side effects that he couldn't put his mind into, you know, wanting to end his life. So,
yes. And Vanessa, you describe beautifully, very articulately what to our audience, what it's like to be in the depths of this depression that you can't feel. So we've got to go to a break, but after the break, I want to talk, Vanessa, with why, you know, you, what is it, two things, why you're willing to come onto shows like this to tell this story, and then what you hope to achieve, and then secondly, how is Zara, your daughter, coping? So we'll go to a break. You're with TNT, the place for truth and freedom. We'll be back after these messages.
While serving in Afghanistan, I was hit by sniper fire. The fighting was so intense, the medevac chopper was barely able to land. In the hospital, I was given a 5% chance to live. It's a good thing math wasn't my best subject. Today, I visit classrooms and share my story. I talk to kids about dealing with life's struggles. I tell them, with a little help and a lot of work, that you can overcome any challenge.
DAV helps veterans like Adam get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
I know that some struggles are big and some are small, but they're all struggles, and you have to learn to get through them. With support from DAV, more veterans like me can live their best life. And as a new father, I have one more reason to keep on keeping on. My victory is being there for the next generation.
Adam Alexander, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver. And we dedicate a lot of our time to going as fast as possible. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently, experiencing problems with their memory, or having trouble with routine tasks. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services, make a plan for the future, and access available treatments. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together.
Exploring solutions to the mental health crisis. This is Mind Medicine on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back. I'm with Vanessa that we'll continue the conversation. And one thing I want to say is for many years, I've been a professional speaker for 31 years, running all sorts of programs, leadership programs. And one of the And on my Charles Kovess show, I often talk about this, and Vanessa has reinforced for me the importance of doing this, of putting all your health records in one place. So collate them, go back through your whole life, all the different places in your computer, put them into one place and keep detailed records of every single health intervention. There's a whole bunch of reasons why. And from my perspective, whilst doctors, the medical profession, can be angels, they are for that half the time. The other half, they are devils. And the whole COVID exercise would not have happened had the medical profession spoken up and looked after patients. Quite frankly, I'm appalled at the behavior of most doctors around the world, because they simply complied with what the government wanted, knowing full well it was not good for patients. And this story with, and Vanessa's not saying that, but I say it. I say that you have to be, you know, it's a real problem getting good health advice. So keep your records. Now back to you, Vanessa. Why aren't you going off into the, you know, going off and being silent? You're speaking up because you can see that, or tell us, you know, what it is inside you that's giving you the courage to do this, because it's a scary thing to do.
Yeah, I guess the first time it was, but I feel very privileged to be able to be in this situation that I'm in, that I can, I want to give my husband a voice.
Ah, what a beautiful picture that is. You are giving Franco a voice.
Yes, because he had all faith in me, and he was a wonderful, supportive husband to me and had such faith in me. And so I saw when I was in public hospitals, I was afraid for a lot of people when they would leave the hospital that they didn't have a carer there to look after them when they left. And I often spoke to partners of people that were in hospital and say, look, you really need to get help yourself, because it's a very difficult time. I just feel, because I put myself in a situation where I was financially, I'd got insurance when my daughter was a little girl, not thinking that I'd ever use it in case my husband fell ill. And of course that came, you know, we used it, and it meant then I could be with him full time to look after him. And so I just did whatever I could do. I was researching constantly. But I feel like my husband, he was an incredibly strong man and very social and very giving to so many people and very loved. And so when this came about, it was so left field of anything anyone could expect to happen to him, because this can happen to anyone. I believe stress was what caused my husband to selling a business. It was a very stressful time for him, and I do believe that this is what caused the imbalance in his brain, and we just couldn't get the chemistry working. And it's quite amazing when you look at the images that Professor David Nutt showed at the for the TGA about how the brain of a severely depressed person looks. And there's this darkness, like a black hole. And often when you talk to someone who's very unwell, depressed, they feel like they're deep in a hole, like it's very dark and they're deep. They feel nothing. There's nothing. There's just nothing there. Like I said, we can't describe I can't describe it to you, and he couldn't describe it
to me. Well, no, that's a pretty good description of, you know, that you haven't experienced yourself. But what's very interesting about what you've just said, Vanessa, is I'm a big fan of John Rappaport, a wonderful investigative journalist who says there is no scientific test for any mental disorder. And there's over 300 of them described in the DSM-5, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychological Society. But you have just identified one of very few scientific tests that taking a brain scan does show it, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, that was pretty amazing. And it was the first time it had ever been done. So I understand technically it's not something that anyone can do. Like, so the fact that he was able to present this image before and after the first treatment of psilocybin. It was amazing, the change in the brain.
And hang on. So that piece happened as well. So he had the brain scan before, and then I didn't quite get. So he got onto psilocybin before he died?
No. Sorry. This is not to do with my husband. This was to do with the TGA. This is Professor David Nutt.
Yes, I understand. Yes, the scans of what psilocybin does. Yes, wonderful.
Yes. So, and it's just, watching that was quite amazing. And so I do what I do now because I worry about the youth. I live on a train line where in the last few weeks we've had four disruptions on this one train line, which are all suicide attempts, some failures. Like, I don't know that any, I believe that they all died. I'm very close to this train line. I hear it. And often it's young people that are taking their life. And I feel like if there's something else out there than giving them an antidepressant, because I can see what happened when my husband took the antidepressant 2 days later. And often people don't talk about what's going on, and so they don't tell their family, I'm not feeling the best, I'm about to take an antidepressant. They don't share that information. And then suddenly they feel 2 days later or a day or two later, it says on the packaging, there's a risk of suicidal ideation. So on all the packaging of antidepressants. So if you're not sharing that with your family, you can take action straight away, and because you become, for young people, they don't know any different. They just think, wow, is this what life has become? Having my young daughter, I don't ever want her to go down that track. So
that's a salutary warning, everybody, as well. If you're thinking of taking these, and I've heard it said many times, clients of mine who have gone to doctors, I'm feeling bad, I hear you, take this pill. And, most of the doctors that I've been exposed to, they never tell people to read the inserts, the package inserts carefully. And if you don't understand what it is, I want you to read this insert first, then come back to me, because then you'll have informed consent. No, frankly, I didn't have informed consent. Most people who take these antidepressants don't have informed consent. And I've had close experience with partners, over the past who have been on such medications, and they are problematic. So tell us about your daughter. I mean, what's your perspective on what Zara is happening, and, her pride, if you like, in Franco?
Yeah, look, she was very young. She was only 8 when he suddenly became ill, but she'd had such a wonderful relationship with her father. He was very always involved with her. Even throughout the times he was in hospital, she would go to his bed and lie down with him and treated it like a hotel, which was quite nice. So I tell her, I share with her what I'm doing and what I'm trying to achieve from it. And she's okay about it. Like, she's only still very young. And I've had her go to an organization called Feel the Magic, which does a wonderful work for children who have lost a parent to either illness or suicide, and they have a special program just for kids who have lost a parent to suicide. So just teaching them how to deal with those feelings, because one great thing about the public system is that when a parent tries to take their life and is not successful and ends up in hospital, when they know that there's a child involved, they will bring the counselling services in to speak to that child. So a year before my husband ended up being successful, they spoke to her about what was going on. So she was more aware of what suicide meant and that it had nothing to do with her personally, that it was just his illness. And so that helped a lot when the time came for me to tell her that
Yes, I have five children, Vanessa, and my youngest is 13. My oldest is 42. So there's a decent spread there, and I can see so readily that a child would personalize, a suicide situation and say, well, it must be something to do with me because, my father doesn't want to be with me. So that's wonderful to hear. I've never heard about that program, Feel the Magic. I also happen to be on the board of Kids Foundation, and I've been on the board for 7 years, and I bring it to people's attention because Kids Foundation does two things. It teaches kindergarten kids to avoid unnecessary risk, not to avoid all risk, but to take sensible risks. But secondly, we run programs to help kids recover from particularly burns. And kids who are burnt, and then the discrimination that happens because they look, in many cases, they're disfigured from the burns, of course. So we've, as an organization for 31 years, we've been dealing with this. So, I think all of us in audiences, in whatever country you're looking at, whether live now or as a recording, we need to understand the resources that are there and support, and perhaps to give financial support to people running programs, because I hear a lot of programs that struggle for financial support. When Vanessa, you found a lot of, there's a lot of kids who aren't getting the support they need.
That's right. And this Feel the Magic program, their funding was cut off last year.
Great. Precisely. Yeah.
But then they fought it because it was funding specifically for children of that had lost a parent to suicide. And it's a very different loss to losing a parent to illness or to an accident or to, it's a very there's a lot more that a child has to deal with, probably the worst type, because their parent has taken their own life. It's been taken from them or just through illness. So they lost their funding, but then through hard work got it back. So, and then there's Lifeline. They do a lot of work. They do amazing work. And I sit on a panel there for suicide prevention, on how to get the message out there for people to come and talk to someone when they're in a bad way. So
yeah, thank you for reminding us of Lifeline, because that's supported by the public, isn't it? By a large number of volunteers who are doing great work when the government's wasting money in so many ways and doesn't support these mental health issues. So Mind Medicine Australia, everybody, is at mindmedicineaustralia.org.au. Vanessa's 5-minute video, 5-minute story that was presented to the TGA is available on that website. I urge you to check that out. And, Vanessa, what you're doing is of great importance. I honor you for doing what you're doing, and You know, if any time you want to come back and share some further insights, I mean, we need to drive support. And what we want from this conversation and Vanessa's work is to drive increasing demand for psychedelic drugs. There are many. I'm president of the Australian Industrial Hemp Alliance, for example. And cannabis, medicinal cannabis, is a wonderful psychedelic drug. So, Vanessa, keep up the good work. Keep up the passion. I love the red that you're wearing. I'm fully supportive of what you are doing. You're fully supportive of Mind Medicine Australia. And what I love is this linkage between the insurance you took out that directly enabled, probably that insurance money has been a crucial factor in the legalization of these psychedelic drugs. Well done on your journey. I look forward to seeing you again. Sad, sad story, but an important story. Everybody, have a wonderful Sunday evening, Sunday morning, wherever you are on the planet. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And remember, look after your mind. It's the only one you have. Bye for now. See you next week.